And we are back. Black and a Half. And we are back. Black and a Half, episode number 255.
255.
I'm Silas Lindenstein.
I'm Samantha Rund.
And this is the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle. Probably. Today's episode is a deep dive, sinkhole into I want to say acting anxiety, acting despair, not knowing what you're doing.
Getting old.
That's a continuous theme of mine.
Stress getting and old stand and
looking
up.
Back. And some commitments made, promises made, see if they're delivered. Who knows? All I know is that I'm getting close. By the time this comes out, hopefully, my new rap single is out. That's what I'm hoping. It's already been out and people are talking about it. So, and that's what I can hope for in the future. But will it be happening? I don't know. This is like time travel. Here we are. This is released. It's already out. Supposed to have been. Did it go well? I don't know. Could be famous now. I don't know. There's a lot of unknown. But Call Me a Nerd. Check it out on Apple Music. Is it called that now? Apple Music? It's not iTunes anymore, right?
I don't know.
Okay. Apple Music, iTunes, or Spotify.
I like that I look like a person that knows still.
You're pretty hip. Pretty hip. It's the confidence. Weird. It's really the confidence.
It's the confidence thing. Yeah, like, hell yeah,
the confidence you got. Fearlessness.
The fearlessness, yeah.
Yeah.
And clearly the wardrobe.
Yeah.
Man, you know? I feel like I'm in this weird age and stage where like some of the stuff I want to wear, it's like, I could do that when I'm in my artist mode, but just walking around, I would feel weird.
Dressed how you are?
Not right now. I'm like casual, but I'm just thinking like some of the outfit choices I would want. Like half of the reason why I would want to do a play or something is like I could wear my outfit I want to wear and feel normal. Like,
I know that's why I'm going to do a play about Sylvester the Cat, because I just really want to dress up like Sylvester the Cat. And it's my excuse. That's just me. Just being me.
I didn't remember Sylvester having any clothes, so I might not be thinking of the same.
Well, I wore Sylvester. I played Sylvester the Cat in high school.
Doesn't that cat only, he's like black with white paws?
But I was in a Sylvester suit.
Well, I'm glad you had clothes on, Silas.
Well, I mean, I had clothes, but I guess the character did not.
Right. That's
what I was wearing. As we talk about acting, you got to get inside the skin of that actor, of that character. That's what I did with Sylvester. I got inside. Oh, what's he like on the inside? It's me. It's just me. Yeah. So that's what I mean with Sylvester. Anyhow, folks, enjoy this episode. If you could do us a favor and hit that follow button, hit the subscribe button. It does more for you. It does more for us than you would ever realize. And you can be notified when a new episode drops, whenever I drop it. That's what'll happen. So, folks, sit back, relax, open your hearts, open your ear holes, and listen to episode number 255 of Black and a Half.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Yes, this is Black and a Half, hosted by Silas Lindenstein and Samantha Rund.
Black and a Half, Black and a Half, Black and a Half, Black and a Half.
Silas, I have learned that I know less about lighting than I thought I did. As I've been trying to get a little photo set up in my garage, and what I've been able to do is take photos, upload it to AI to go like, what am I doing wrong? Mm. And it's explaining to things. And I'm like, I thought I was supposed to have even lighting. And it's like, well, no, you don't actually want even lighting unless you're doing like a passport photo. You want everything to look, you know, you need the main key light and the things that I've seen before. But like, it was like, here's a problem I've had with like, as a student learning things. I think that I would get to a point that I'm like, I feel like if I ask another question, they're just going to be, you are so stupid. Get out of my class. And so I would stop asking and just start nodding like,
oh my gosh, I shouldn't laugh because that's like, I'm sorry. I shouldn't
they're laugh. They're going to laugh like Samantha just like, laughed no, at
like
me.
Like you as a child, like how old were you? How old were you when you had that?
25. Oh. I mean, in college, like I think there was a point where I'm like, well, yeah.
Because I'm laughing because you're so not stupid that it's so funny to me to think of like a professor or teacher doing that. That's just like so ridiculous. That's why I'm laughing. But I am stupid
in some way. Like I do think.
Yeah, you're a man. So
I have. Yeah, I think I have. Now that I understand this whole lack of being able to visualize anything that other people have, I think I'm understanding. I think it might essentially be a learning disability. In a way, because I'm realizing why I've had so many why I get so frustrated with like IKEA directions, why I get so frustrated at like, I can't see what you guys are talking about. Like, I can't just read something and know how to put it together or how to set it up. I need to do it hands on. I love for someone just, you need to come show me. I've always said, show me how to do it and I'll do it. You need to show me though. Like if I go side by side with you, I got it down. I understand. But if I have to read an instruction manual to figure this freaking thing out, I don't know what the hell we're talking about. I'm gone. I don't know what it is. But I've always said, oh, I'm a visual learner. And I think I meant like, yeah, because I can't see anything like in my head.
So I need to, I never thought about it until you said that. I'm like, huh.
And so I think that's why I had such trouble. I did horrible in my lighting for the stage class. I think it was the worst grade I got in theater.
I don't think I had to take a lighting for the stage class.
Yeah, I didn't have to either. I shouldn't have.
I did costume.
Yeah, I should have done something else. But I think it was because I could not. It was all this textbook plus some math of, well, how do you do this lighting? But I'm like, well, I can get out there and mess with lights and make it look good. But I don't know what you're talking about when we're just, you know, just here, just abstractly. But I'm realizing these lighting designers probably could.
Huh? When people describe stuff, do you feel stuff? I know we talked about this a little bit.
Yeah. But I can feel emotion. Like I feel like.
When people are describing things, I'm thinking that might also be part of why I'm so queasy when people describe. Like they got a cut or a wound or this or that, like I get really queasy. And I wonder if it's because like, I'm not seeing what they're talking about. I'm like imagining, I'm like sensing the feelings of it. And it makes me feel really queasy.
I mean, I get grossed out. Like, I think I can feel the, like, if you're talking about a tooth getting yanked out, I'm like, I feel it. I feel,
remember. And it's different when it happens to you, right? Than when you, like, you don't feel as queasy if it's yourself, right? Ew.
Not
Ew.
Queasy, no.
No.
More panicked. More panicked. Oh, yeah. And I feel like now that I'm actually, it's kind of like, I think I told you what I was told about singing, about not, you don't have to like your voice, you just have to accept it.
I don't remember that.
Oh, okay. Well, that was something I read and I was like, oh, whoa, boom, blow up my head. So I'm thinking now, I'm like, okay, so I need to accept that I cannot visualize things and I have to do them. And that this is to some degree a disability. Maybe it's not a learning disability, but it could be. And so now I'm just taking my time to go through these things. And well, the great thing about, I mean, I think that's the best part about using AI as a tool, which what's funny is I'm going through the camera and all these settings, like automatically detect the eyes, like taking pictures of a human. That's all AI. That is all AI. That's always been there. I'll get into that in a second. But I'm not being like ashamed of like, okay, I'm using this tool to get around my disability that I'm figuring out how to do this. And it's helping me. I'm getting interactive feedback because people will make me feel stupid unless they're like open, right? They're like, I'm here to teach you.
I don't want to sound like a jerk to just be like, you're just looking for an excuse to not feel bad about using AI. Like you're going to be using it anyway. I'm not saying it's not real what you're talking about. Maybe.
No, but I'm like, AI doesn't judge me for not knowing how to do the thing. I mean, it makes fun of me, but it doesn't judge me.
No, I get it. I think it calls me out. That's the reason why so many people are talking to AI so much, probably.
Yeah. I mean, I get the therapy thing, you know, like some people. I'm not afraid to tell people embarrassing stuff in general, but I just don't want to. I'm sorry if I don't get it. Like my guitar teacher would even like, he'd be telling me to do something. I'm like, so I kept asking him because he's kind of talking theory, which again, it's in the air. I'm not getting it. And then he would finally he was like, I feel like you're being a real contrarian today. Cause I kept like, I wasn't arguing. I was just kept asking cause I wasn't getting it.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, fine. I'm not going to freaking ask you anything again about this.
And that bothers me. Gosh, am I going to get on a soapbox again?
Maybe.
I might.
But I was using it to get instant feedback and then go, oh, okay, so move it? Like this is, I also know it doesn't also know everything that it's trying to, like, that's why I try to take pictures and go like, okay, this is confusing. I know you're going to gaslight me if you're wrong.
Right. Like the difference between using it when you have a fully developed brain and you already know how to ask questions and you can fact check, like it's a difference using it when you already know how to do those things yourself or find the answers versus using it when you've never learned that base skill set, you know?
Yeah.
For younger people.
I don't even let my kids. We watch wrestling. That's about it. They don't get screen time.
That's lucky.
Well, I don't know. I'm stubborn. But it's...
I don't have an option. There has to be screen time.
I see. I also grew up in a mountain. We didn't have screens.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying, you can't be a single parent today and not have screen time. Like, it's not going to happen. Do you have a nanny? Who's going to be doing stuff for your kids? Like,
what if there's no screens?
Well, then that's different. But if there's screens in the home, like you're going to have screen time.
What I'm saying, there could be no, I'm sure there's.
Oh, but that's the reason why I said lucky, because I would prefer less screen time.
Oh, yeah. So. But I'm doing this and going like, oh, okay, so try it 100. Like I'm changing the settings on it and getting instant, like figuring it out that I, and then I started going, oh, well, let me try this and being able to do it. And I could experiment and finally, and even though I'm like, I don't know if this, I'll see if this looks good. It gave me a freedom, but it made me realize I don't know so many things I didn't know about. That I never understood why things didn't work. And now I'm like, oh, okay. I think now I'm getting key lighting and fill light. I think I understand that a little bit better. But I don't know. Some of these tech things are just hard for me. And it's amazing what I'm like, oh, that's real simple on this thing. This little computer thing is simple. Mm-hmm. Lighting is magical. This is magic. How did you do that? I don't understand. Even then brightness and hue. I know I'm going to go in and mess with stuff, but I always end up hitting the auto thing.
Mm-hmm.
It'll auto adjust. Oh, that's good enough for me. I'm like, what am I going to change? I don't know. I'm not that smart with this stuff. I'm just. So what I was saying though, I saw an interview with Neil deGrasse Tyson. Mm-hmm. And he was talking about, because he's a big fan of AI.
And how much he wants to be on our podcast.
Yes. Yeah, that too, I'm sure.
We're so exclusive.
He says, he was like, you know, they've been using the AI for a long time in science. And in, he's like, we would not be where we are in our understanding of the universe and the galaxies and space exploration without it. It's just now. It's gotten into this mainstream thing, and he had a real rational look at it to me. I was like, oh, okay, yeah, still measuring concerns. He understands the concerns, but it's just more as the a lot of he brought up a couple other things that when they hit mainstream, there has been panic about it, and AI is not the only thing through history. You see this happen, and now this is just another one of the.
It's true, but it's also things. A generation of people who, you know, grew up on the Terminator and a few other. But
God,
I'm just saying, if you've watched the Terminator,
Rory Scovel, do you know him? The comic.
Yeah, I definitely remember the name.
Yeah, he was from Seattle. He has a great joke that I saw the other day online. He said, "I took the COVID vaccine." If it works, great. If it kills me, wonderful. But but I will never ask what's in it. You know, and I've thought about that with like AI stuff, like, hey, yeah, it's going to really help me or it's going to kill us all. Either one. Okay.
As long as
I don't have to like wander the apocalypse.
Oh man, I don't feel like, oh, okay. I think I've kind of accepted my inability to have any real impact on what happens with life. That.
Oh.
I mean, on my little corner of life, sure. But you know, on some of these things where it's like I didn't create it, I didn't have anything to do with it.
Yeah, I mean, I think I've hit a point and being older, maybe I'm like, look, I'm closer to death than my birth anyway at this point.
I mean, I have a different idea because I have a kid now. Like,
yeah.
Before I had a kid, it's just really terrible. It's just awful. But before I had a kid, I don't want to say it was like a little bit, maybe a little bit of a Thelma and Louise mentality, a little bit, where it was just like, I'm going to live. And obviously I wasn't doing anything crazy, but it's like in terms of like being an artist or something, right? It's like, I'm gonna live. And then like, oh no, if everything goes to crap when I'm old, yeah, you just take yourself out. You're going out anyway. Like I had like just, like there was just a sort of laissez-faire, you know, kind of, but now it's like, no, you gotta just like, you gotta survive. If you're a mom, you gotta survive. And then if you're dead, you become undead. And then you keep surviving. Like there's no,
you become undead.
You become undead because your kid needs you. Like there's no option in which you are not around. Cause like,
yeah, like, I mean, it is my children are the reason I'm like, oh, I worry about the future more. Exactly. I was like, I don't have much time left. So.
Oh God, Silas. No,
I
you
don't.
Well, you definitely have to be here.
Less.
Still at least 100. No, a little bit more than 100 because we're supposed to still be podcasting when I'm 100 and you're older than me. So just know that was in the contract.
Actually, I can't even say pain for years. I don't have many pain for years. I'm like, no, I'm in pain. So I guess.
Well, you know, life is pain. So just get used to it.
Yeah.
I am feeling sassy right now. You are. I don't know. Like, I don't know, Silas, when you were talking about, I just have to accept it. I think some days I have the like Zen acceptance and other days it's like, F that.
You accept nothing.
Some days. Right.
Yeah. Well,
I
do you ever wish, I mean, have you been, I've been spent so much of my life self-conscious. And I just, the idea that other people have lived so long not being self-conscious or not worrying.
Okay, what was the question you were going to ask me? That's what I was imagining, which is why I was laughing. Were you going to ask if I have ever been self-conscious or never not been self-conscious?
More like, have you, I don't know, you don't strike me. You've done a lot of stuff that makes me think that you haven't been that self-conscious about like your performing or in that area.
Thanks. I appreciate that. I think, you know, I kind of think that part of it might be why it is that people do it, maybe. I don't know. I think performing for me always felt like the freest that I get to be.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like, I didn't party and, well, a little bit maybe, but not like party, just like regular, right. You know, a couple of drinks, karaoke, dancing, not like, you know, you know, just like regular. Not
sorority movie.
Right.
Kind of party.
I just felt like, you know, performing, that's my chance to be free. And it's like about the process and it's about, you know, this other stuff. And yeah. If people were judging me, well, then clearly they weren't artists. Like the judgment is on them. I mean, not to say like I never would get like, you know, never care about how a performance or something is going to go. Just, I think, yeah, obviously that's part of why when I start to miss performing a lot, I think part of it is like, oh, I just don't feel like that free. Well, nobody's free. But
you, are you saying without, because you feel free on stage?
Yeah. I feel, and I've been asking myself, like, how can I feel like that more on a regular basis? Not like I don't feel, I just think a lot, right?
But you don't seem to worry about other people not liking your joke. Right?
My one joke. Thank you.
No, I'm saying like, if you're going to go up and tell a joke, you don't really care.
Oh my God, Silas.
If it's funny.
Oh, that's
to great. Other people.
That's great that I come off like that. I will say that probably getting up to do stand-up was the most terrifying. Other than that one musical theater class where I would bomb because I would get nervous and my breath support would go out. But when I was like, if I was in the habit of doing stand-up and going up repeatedly, then I'd get numbed down to how anxious I was. But if it was a while before I would do it, oh my goodness. I would, the crazy level of it, well, not like crazy level anxiety, but just like really, really high nervousness. But I knew that the moment I got on stage and grabbed the mic and got in it, then it's like, I would be focusing on something else. It was the lead up to it. The lead up that was like the hardest to deal with. And then when I'm on there, I mean, I guess part of it is because I know like some of it's going to be crap until it's not crap. And
yeah,
and some of it, if it's good and I really think it's good, then I'm like, well, I know it's good. They're just not the right audience. Or it's like, oh, this is bad. They know it's bad and I know it's bad. So I'm going to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I'm maybe tend to be kind of a realist when I'm doing it, maybe.
I feel like, because even acting, like I'm like, I go to an audition and I'm like, how, but they didn't cast, why didn't they cast me?
Because there's a
was lot. That not, no, hold on. This is my thought.
Sorry, okay, I'm sorry.
I'm like, but I thought I was good. And was I wrong? How was I, then my whole life is a lie. Like,
Does it really go to that point for you?
Oh, yeah. Well, when I, the first 48 hour film project thing that I auditioned for, like the first year they did it, I think, or the first or the second year, I auditioned and then they, I think I've told you this. Then they asked like, oh, we'd love you to be part of our thing. Like, yeah. Like, oh, yeah, be great. Because it worked out. Sierra had just been born. So I was just like, I needed something, but I couldn't do much, right? But one weekend I could. And then I get there for the thing and they wrote the script. And I was basically going to just be a background person. And the woman brought her husband in, who never acted before, to be the main character, to one of the main characters on there. And I was like, wait,
nepotism.
Okay, But my thought process was like, you didn't like my audition so much that you're going to take someone who's never acted before and have them in that role rather than just work with what you have. So if I had been good, they would have just been working around, you know, me and the other people in this. But so I was like, well, this makes me feel awful. Oh, like, geez. I'm worse than this nobody. Just the fact that he'd never done anything before. So I'm like, that's odd to me. It's very odd to me that you would do that.
It's interesting. It is like the meaning making of it. I don't know why, but I promise it's connected. I'm not going to go on a Shakespeare rant, but for whatever reason, when I was in my car today at the stoplight, I was thinking nothing is right or wrong. Only thinking makes it so.
Yeah,
I think some things clearly are wrong, but obviously we're getting the whole circumstance, blah, blah, blah. And yes, in certain cases you would say, okay, that wasn't wrong then, blah, blah, blah. But it's that meaning making of it, because her doing that, it doesn't necessarily mean anything was right or wrong about your performance. It's interesting to me, and I wonder why. I'm sure you wonder why too, because we're talking about this right now.
Yeah.
Like, why is it that that was the meaning you took from it?
Well, it's still like, why would you put somebody who's never acted in a main role before? And, you know, like, you had my resume to at least see that I had. So how bad was I
in that audition? That's the part where I just, you know, I wonder I would wonder what your acting teachers were like to begin with, because my high school theater teacher was really great. And also I had a lot of good feedback. So I think I started off on my acting journey with so much positive feedback. And then my primary acting teacher in college, she really ingrained in us. There were a few different that you could choose from, but the one that I had chosen was fortunate to get. She was so process-based, and it was very much about, this is the truth of this moment. For let's say, like, when Lindsay plays this role, Lindsay has her whole history, and she would have us do multiple scenes, like the same character. So I'm thinking of, for example, we did Angels in America. Okay. Was one of the ones that we worked on. And she was the acting coach for the national tour, and like very accomplished woman. We would sometimes see the same scene, but with different people playing the same scene. And then I would see how Brooke did it, and I would see how Lindsay did it, and I would see how Rachel did it. And Rachel wasn't in that class, but anyway, whatever. I would see like these three different people do it, and I would see, oh, that was great. But it had that was the style of it because of her. Oh, that was great. And that had the this and that. And every person there would be different parts of each performance that would pop based off of, you know, that person's life experience. And so then it was like, okay, well, if we were casting this, I don't know if she talked about that part, but it was kind of like, who would you pick? Well, they were all good. Which one felt more in line with what you saw? And of course, some people, if they were bad or they were not a right fit for the role, you would see it.
Yeah.
And I think we did that in grad school too, a few times, like the same sort of performance, different people doing it. And yeah, some people, you like their performance better than others, but when people are good, you know, they have their craft and they're good. You could be like, okay, well now it's going to come back. Now it's going to kind of come down to opinion. So, I mean, your instance, maybe her husband was crying and was like, if you don't cast me, it's over. You're sleeping on the couch, you know, you never know. But the leap to then that mean that you were bad.
Well, my thing is like, cause you could write the script, right? You're writing the script. So you can write anybody how you want. So granted, they didn't really know me besides my audition, but I think it's different than if you're casting the Music Man and who you see, who do I see as the core of Harold Hill? Does this person have the essence that I feel? You're writing a script from originally. You have the people. You write to them. And maybe they did not have that skill as screenwriters. Maybe they didn't have the ability. Granted, I didn't think they really followed the 48-hour requirements very well. I didn't like the way they were doing it. So like, well, you couldn't even figure out how to put a helmet in this, let alone. But I will say, like, I love the process. So sometimes for me, anything after opening night is really downhill. Like, because I'm like, yeah, I love the process. I don't know that I ever went a semester without being cast in something. I was constantly cast. Yeah. So I had lots of
positive feedback.
I had such confidence. And then I came to Seattle and people were not casting me. And I was like, oh.
That's hard. I mean,
okay. Well,
I don't know. I mean, I think sometimes I feel like I was always good enough. Like my craft was always good enough, but I would sometimes be like, oh, they wanted somebody who looked different.
Yeah.
Especially with TV stuff. Right. But then also there's some stuff where I can look back at performances and be like, my confidence was so high. And now I look back at it and I'm like, oh, I do X, Y, and Z differently now. I do that better.
Yeah.
But just hopping on the sassiness train here for a little bit, that, you know, when somebody has a lot of experience and they cast somebody who doesn't have any experience, because, you know, it's like, oh, this just fits the person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, but they don't have experience for what it's like doing the multiple takes, memorizing lines. It's not just about this person walks in and does it for a large role or whatever. I'm not naming names, but I do remember a couple of experiences, like, okay, two that stand out that I hadn't thought about since you mentioned one of them. I was just kind of like a little bummed that I didn't get that part, but I could see what they saw about the other person's, like, oh yeah, totally. This like has their name written all over it.
Yeah.
But they didn't know what they were doing as an actor. So it took a lot longer. And I'm like, I would have grown into it.
Yeah.
And then the filming would have been much quicker,
mm-hmm.
where it was a little bit of me then was just like, okay, sure. I'll just do this small little thing instead. Let me help however else. Cause I was just excited to be a part of the project. But me now would be a little bit like, okay, F around and find out, like, how's that going to go for you? You know, just, and then there was another time where I was auditioning for a musical and they were like, we really want good actors. It's really important that this role is such an acting role, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, okay. So I did the audition. I wasn't the strongest singer. I mean, I could sing, but so they did a second hour. They were really great, blah, blah, blah. So they did message me later and they were like, you know what? Like, by far you were the strongest actor we had, but we decided to go another route. And I was annoyed because I'm like, you said that's what you cared the most about, but it was also like, whatever. I just, you know, did something else instead.
Yeah.
But I kind of wish, like, gosh, I kind of wish I'd feel the sassy all the time.
Well, it was like a couple of years ago, like I said to Gretchen, I'm like, well, I'm the funniest dad on the block around here. Mm-hmm. And she's like, well, that's kind of arrogant to say. And I'm like,
the block?
I said, I'm a comedian. I better be the funniest.
Yeah.
Like, I'm required to be. What do you mean? Like, what are you questioning that I'm not why don't you, don't think I'm funnier than him? What, are you kidding me? No, come on. Look, I'm going to be confident in this. I get so worried, you know, I don't know. When I do comedy, I'm half the time I'm like, yeah, it's a solid. I know if this is a solid joke.
Man.
I've done it a bunch, but when they don't laugh.
Well, it isn't the right. If you know it's a solid joke, then it's not the right audience for the joke.
Am I, what did I do? What's wrong? What did I, is it you? Are you not intelligent? What, why am I here? Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe those other audiences were the dumb audiences that laughed at it. And I should just quit.
One should always quit. One should always quit comedy.
But I worry too much now that I don't perform as much.
Yeah.
I worry more about not doing well than I did.
Because
I'm like, oh, no, tomorrow. I'll do better tomorrow.
Yeah, exactly. That's 100%. Yeah.
And because I'm done with dive bars, I'm just like, I have no interest whatsoever.
Well, yeah, I mean,
I'd rather not. I'd rather just set up in my backyard and invite neighbors over and tell jokes than I would to go to a dive bar and do comedy to people that don't want me there.
I guess I texted you this. Was it like a week ago or something that I'm like, hi, I miss doing stand up. It definitely doesn't work with my schedule. But also, I don't know how much I would actually enjoy it if like some of my friends or people that I knew from before weren't there. I can't imagine. I mean, I can't imagine, but I also can't imagine wanting to go to do an open mic with like a bunch of random 20 something year old men, boys. Like, I just can't imagine it. Like, if it was already not that pleasant for me before when there were a handful of people that I knew.
Yeah.
And I was doing it more regularly. And now to have to work my schedule out in order to go and then be around people that I don't know and probably wouldn't have anything in common with, judging, I don't know, these 20-year-old comedians.
Well, you should. Honestly, there's a degree that you shouldn't have a lot in common.
Well, yeah, with
the 22-year-old person.
Yes, exactly. That's why it's like, because you're only going up there for a couple of minutes. So like, if you're not getting to socialize a little bit with the people there somewhat, it just feels like such a waste of time.
So I went the other day and apparently, so this comic is apparently good. I was told he's really good, but I was listening to him and he had good stage presence and everything. And I'm listening, but then he starts doing these jokes about basically going downtown on ladies, right? But graphically, using the words and stuff. And I'm like, I'm bored. There are some topics that are just like, why? What do I care?
How funny is the joke? Is it just shock value? Or is he trying
But here's the thing. Like,
a good enough joke?
There was not.
It wasn't a joke.
No, it was a joke. I mean, it was funny. People were laughing, but I was also kind of like, I'm not impressed by jokes like that now. There's nothing you could do to say to make me impressed. I want to hear about somebody's everyday life and what their soul thinks.
How do you know that's not his everyday
and make
life?
That funny. You know what? And in some ways I'm like, it's too easy to make people laugh just talking about this.
Well, that's why I feel like I was saying, is it just shock value? Because I feel like people, like those jokes have to be extra good then to be worth saying it. If aged comedians are going to like find value of it. Right.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not the audience, you know, they're a bunch of young folks were laughing at these jokes about that. They've never heard anyone talk about that on stage. Right. Yeah. And I'm just like, I want to hear about I want you to make a joke about Monopoly. Mm-hmm. Like, I want you to take something benign and make that funny.
Yeah.
Because that's interesting to me. That is amazing to me. But when you talk about really most jokes about sex, I've heard them. I've heard a version of it. It's got to be unique you not good enough? I think there's part of me that goes, you're not skilled enough yet to just talk about life.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I don't like, clearly I enjoy when people say crass things in general. And then when you give them a microphone, it's even better because it's louder. Of course not. But like, I'm being sarcastic for anybody who can't see my face right now. I remember there was this one comedian, again, I'm not going to name names, and I saw them, I think, performing at the Comedy Store or something, and they were just so crass, and they didn't have punchlines, and it was so gross, and I felt that. I was, like, bored and grossed out, and, like, and why are they famous? Like, I don't get it, but... You know, but then I can't tell you what, because it'll really give it away then. And I don't like being mean to people. But then I saw them on something on Netflix. And they were delivering such amazing zingers. Like, their comedy was so solid that I'm like, oh, did I just see them when they were working out material? And then I judged them harshly because they were like kind of gross in my opinion, but like effing hilarious. Like, and to get me to say that for that kind of material, I'm like, oh, they really know what they're doing. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So that
did impress the Samantha.
Yes. So it was kind of, it was interesting.
I don't know if I'm just old, if that's the reason, but like there's some, like Pete Holmes cracks me up. Just some of the stuff that he, do you know Pete Holmes?
Name is familiar, but I'm not tracking.
I mean, it's funny because you almost think that he's a clean comedian, but he's not at all. He swears a lot in his stuff, but it's so, but he can make anything funny.
Oh, that's
he can
great.
Talk about anything, the universe, religion. He's religious. He's religious. He used to do he used to go around doing jokes to churches. Like, but he just knows how to connect with everybody about anything and talk about it. And I think that's just such a good skill.
Yes. I was going to say valuable skill set. And then, yeah, you got it. Totally.
Like, I wish I could just take a top, like, you know, a random topic and just start writing about it that I need to. That's why I should. Like back when I was doing comedy a lot and you're like, I need new jokes.
Yeah.
Anything comes up and you're like, let me write that down. Let me write this down. Okay. Yeah, I need to start working on that. I need to start getting in that mind frame now, but then I'm busy doing headshots or soccer or whatever.
There's a lot to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not a, well, I already asked you. I shouldn't ask on the air, but I'm like, I wonder if there's like a Saturday daytime mic. Cause I don't know when I'll ever go out on the evening to go do comedy. In a couple of years. I don't know. Gosh.
But also there is an element that I've gone to that stand up is such a small, it's such a niche. Stand up comedy is so niche. Like, it's a very specific thing. You can do, but you can do so much with the skills. Like,
yeah,
the
tell
idea
me
of
more.
Just going to perform stand-up comedy is such a tiny thing to do. Going to talk for 4 minutes, talk for 6 minutes about whatever and making jokes, where I could be crafting a movie. I could be shaping some bigger thing. Like, you could take these skills and do such big things with it that I'm like, I don't, are people going to remember the 3 minutes?
True. We could we could each, what if, well, I don't know. And they said film, that'd be probably be better. But I was like, what if we do solo shows? Should we do a black and a half evening of solo shows? And we could each do comedic solo.
How could we two people do a solo show?
Oh, well, because we each have our time. Like,
that's a duo.
Ha ha ha. No, haven't you ever been to solo show performances? And it's like, you know, it's like an hour and a half performance and you have five different people doing their solo shows. But they each do one. You do like one solo. You've never.
That is not a solo show.
Oh, yes, it
is. Are you saying Vagina Monologues is a solo show?
I haven't been to the Vagina Monologues.
What? Won't you get your woman card taken away?
No.
How did you go to college and not see the Vagina Monologues?
Because at the time, the first time in college when I heard them talk about the Vagina Monologues, I was not comfortable saying the word vagina. And I definitely wasn't going to go to sit through monologues of people discussing theirs. I've never read them. Or heard them.
Yeah, I don't know if that's a solo show, but I like the idea. Just not a solo.
We did those. We did. But I think at the Steppenwolf Theater, I think I went to like an evening of solo shows and they had was it like four different performers, and each performer, they would go on stage by themselves for 30 minutes. They would do their show. Silas, why are you being so, you're being a contrarian right now.
But I'm just saying that's not a solo show.
Yes, it is a solo show. How is it not? Because
there's more than one person.
Oh my gosh.
If the cast, list of the show says anything other than
because one it's name. That's what it does. It's an evening of solo shows. The first show is called Fly on a Water, written by Amanda Nelson. They perform their show. They go. The second show is called, are you going to say, Silas, that because there's a stand-up show and there's 10 stand-up comedians, because the 10 stand-up comedians there are at the one solo show, then there wasn't 10 stand-up comedian sets. There was just a one show. There was one show with 10 comedians that all have the same, they all have the same, like, they don't have the same sets. Okay, so you're thinking of it like show, title of show versus sets. So if you think of it like sets, then you'll agree. You're getting caught up on it being called a show. Because it will say, oh, it will be called an evening of solo shows. And then these are all the performers, each performing their own show.
Shows. I might go if you say plural.
Well, that's what I'm saying, Silas. We should put on solo shows. It could be a black and a half performance experience.
100 people.
100 people in the audience?
No, 100 performers. It'll be a long thing. 100 solo shows.
Oh, good Lord. Are you going to? Small cast. My gosh.
I've wanted to do a one-person show, but I've never. It's that start and middle. It's that start and the end. What is the point of it?
The point is you want to put something on. I've done.
Yeah, but artistically, like what do I want to say? Shows
so far.
Did you write them?
I did write
what
them.
How'd you pick a topic?
Well, the first two were in grad school and it was part of our, I understand the reasoning now, but I didn't in grad school. It was kind of like, so we can always perform and not have to wait for somebody to cast us, right? You could create your own opportunities. The first one, I will say how I did mine, though, is I actually did like to use other text in two of them. I would write some, but I also use text. Actually, one of them I do have on a DVD, if you'd like to see it sometime.
Text messaging?
Oh, no. Okay. I'm getting ahead of myself. The first one I did actually was just like a series of poems that I had written over the years. And I compiled it into a story about moving, and there was a bit of clowning in it. And yes, because we had I think Jane Nichols, was that her name, from Yale, come to teach her.
And a little clowning thrown in, you know, like one does.
There were like three different characters, I think, in it. And one character was the clown that never said anything, but it was all tied into moving. And I think one part maybe was a little bit absurdist. I don't know. Anyway, so that was like the first one. And people at this time, I didn't understand comedy like I do now. So afterwards, people were like, Samantha, we had no idea you were so funny. And I'm like, I didn't know I was funny.
I'm funny.
But now.
Am I funny?
Well, now I understand it was funny because I was so serious and so like committed to something that like, you know, it's like the heightening of it. Right.
Yeah.
But I didn't understand that at the time because I was completely serious when I was doing it. But now I understand, oh, that was funny.
Wait, in college, you didn't understand?
In college, I didn't understand. When I wrote my show, I wasn't writing it to be funny. I did do some comedy, like comic performances.
What was your topic? Did you know the topic was kind of funny?
I mean, I suppose there was a part where it could have been funny, but I was just like so in it and so serious that I wasn't seeing it from that comic lens. But now I'm like, okay, I could also see that. Anyway, the second one that I did, part of it was, there was one character that I used some text from a book in, I think. Okay. It's been many years.
It's
been a long time. So one book, I don't know if it was like Zen and the Art of Motorcycle Maintenance or something. I don't know. One character spoke from a book and one I, you know, obviously I'd written stuff. And then the third one I did, the third one I did was several years later when I was getting frustrated of not having enough artistic stuff that I was doing in the city. Mm-hmm. I moved to LA not too long after that. But anyway, I rented out a space and put it on myself. And actually, I think it was quite good, but I would do it better now. But I mean, but right back then, I'm like, oh, it still has some legs. And one of the characters was Ophelia. But the way that I wrote Ophelia, I used text from like 5 or 6 different Shakespeare plays to create the character of Ophelia mm-hmm. to tell
oh,
her okay. story. And
I feel like I need a nugget to start with. Like, I need to know that what this play is supposed to be about.
Well,
and the endless amount of choices I have makes it incredibly difficult.
Well, that's a lot of choice
paralysis.
Well, yeah, can you like write one?
No, I can't just start writing.
Why can't you write one and then write another one? Like, we could literally,
what do you mean?
With all of our free time.
One what?
Just write one solo show and then know you're going to write another one
about
later.
What though? That's my thing is.
Just start writing.
No,
just tell,
I can't.
Just tell yourself,
to have a topic.
Well, let the topic come to you. Start writing. Sit down.
1,000 things come to me.
Good. It could be about that.
Right, but
it could be about that, Silas. Yeah. It could be about decision fatigue, analysis paralysis. It could be about analysis paralysis, and it could be about you trying to write this and you can't because there's so many options and blah, blah, blah. You could do that. Just sit down at your computer or with your notepad or your quill.
The inside baseball play.
Do it. You could do it like 10 minutes a day. Just write for a week. See what comes up. And then you can always write another.
Okay. Like the 48s, right? For me, the second figuring out what a general plot is of it, I can just write. I can just go, boom, done. Everyone has been like, oh, real? Okay, yeah, let's go. Next word. Then it flows. But just getting to narrow down like what from all of this to that one little story, that's the hard part. I could write every day, every second, if I just knew it was about taking the trash out or what, you know, whatever.
Do you want to 6 months from now or something, just say we're going to put up a black and a half afternoon of solo shows or whatever, and then just put the date out there. Say our shows are going to.
You know what? You can put it for next week. I'm not going to write it till Thursday.
That's
what I do, right?
Oh no!
If I don't have the thing, I gotta have the. Could. Yeah. I guess. You know what I've always wanted?
I should write a solo show.
I guess maybe I could do the one I've always wanted to do. I would love my own Thanksgiving show. Because I want a Thanksgiving song. Because other than what's his name?
Charlie Brown?
No. Adam Sandler.
Oh, yeah.
Adam Sandler has the only Thanksgiving song.
I don't remember his Thanksgiving song. I think I always think of
a
his
turkey
Sonic
for
song.
You and a turkey for me, a turkey oh. for you and a turkey for me. I would love to have a song. You know, if you write a song for a holiday, you can potentially have it played all the time. Because you're like, oh, that one Thanksgiving song. So having there's not a lot of Thanksgiving plays.
Oh. Or
movies, I should say.
That's a fun idea.
Yeah.
Mm. This is a fun idea. I wrote down solo show. I don't know when I'm going to do it. I'm busy. Obviously, we're both busy doing so many things. And I've got to figure out more details about this improv thing that's finally happening next week. Yeah.
You can just improvise.
No.
How are you going to figure? You don't need to figure it out.
I do.
Just improvise. It's called improv.
You're messing with me right now.
Just
I know you're messing with me.
Make it up. Just make it up as you go.
No.
Well, I got a book. I got a book. You can just point to a page and do that one.
That sounds fun. Because it's not just improv, right? So I have to figure out how to weave in the other.
Oh, you got to tie in other things? Like how
I told you how it's not just improv, right?
Is it a mom thing or is it business?
This one's it's just for anybody right now.
So what are you tying in?
Let me write this down because I forgot I wanted to write myself another little note. About achieving goals and manifestation, but like the science part, neuroscience part of it, not like, because I know not everybody wants to hear like woo-woo stuff, right? So really about rehearsing things into reality. And of course, that's always within reason. But it's also tied to the James Clear, you know, identity when you shift goal setting and stuff, right? It's identity shifting. So
you're tying improv into this?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So I'm excited about it. And it's just going to be obviously scratching the surface because it's just going to be 2 hours. So it's like, okay, teaching people some improv stuff, then talking a little about this and then getting back into improv stuff. But I'm super excited about it. I have no idea who's going to come. That part is unsettling, right? Because you build the thing and you're like, okay, who's going to show up? And I know one person is coming and they're very excited about it, which is very kind. So they're trying to get other people to come. And I put on Facebook, of course, whatever, but yeah. I may actually see how to create a meetup. Cause I'm like, huh, I might have better luck if I could do meetup, but that might charge a fee.
It depends. Depends on that.
Yeah. But I don't know. Feels good. And it's maybe a little bit weird, but I'm trying to remind myself, like, just embrace those weird parts of yourself a bit when, you know,
what?
I stopped that thought because I'm rambling now. When I was in grad school, John Jory, he had told us, one of my professors who's this accomplished playwright too.
Yeah, I know him.
Oh,
yeah.
Right. You do. That's right. That's
one
right.
of my favorite. Ever. Yeah. Yeah.
And he had told us, he was like, oh, he had his introduction to us is he wanted us all to do a monologue from, I think it was Henry V or something. That's how because he wanted to see where we were at in our acting. So he had each of us perform that Henry monologue V? So that he could assess us. Yeah.
Wait, was that the BA program? Was that the MFA program?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And then did we ever even do Shakespeare with him? I can't remember. The different schools of thought. I will just go on and on. Happy memories. But he said, he was looking at us and he's like, you know, you're all here because somebody found something weird about you. You're all in this program. Somebody saw something weird about you. And, you know, I think most of us were like, how dare you? Or was that just me? I don't know. It's like weird. And he's like, no, that's good. You're weird. There's something weird about you. And then he was saying, if you guys are going to go to LA, at whatever point he told us at one point,
yeah.
He was like, if you're ever going to go to LA, like, just don't even worry about it. The reasoning why an agent picks you or doesn't pick you down there, it's like, oh, I like that your nostril flares out a little bit. I don't have one of you in my stable. Like, just, it's just so random because you have, it's like, right, the Olympics of saturation. Yeah. And people have trained their whole lives to be there and people who haven't, and nepotism and all sorts of whatever, all vying for the same stuff.
And it's like, it doesn't matter if you have an MFA. My husband's better for the role, so I'm going to.
Well, you know, but we have cameras now. We have opportunities to do our own stuff. And one thing that would have been better for me, though, is if I had started camera classes right when I was there, though.
Hindsight. It's 2040. Samantha, that's our
solo shows.
We're out of time.
That's for the best.
Yeah. Yes, and but we'll move on from here. I will commit to trying to come up with something to write about. I will.
Are you thinking movie or are you thinking like a performance?
When you said solo show, like I do think a solo show would be a good challenge.
It'd to be able fun. To
write something.
Okay.
So I will.
How
work
long?
On, I'll work on a monologue. Huh?
How long?
How long?
Yeah.
That's I mean, a personal since question.
Since we're putting it. Stupid.
Is that what my monologue's oh my gonna God, be about?
I was saying since we're putting it out there. I'm sorry, since you're putting it out there, apparently. Thank goodness it's Zoom and the camera doesn't go all the way down.
I will.
Is that your microphone? Because I just
I can't say in 6 months for sure, but like, oh yeah, no, oh, I should.
This I mean, okay. So what I'm wondering is this, are we thinking it's like, okay, yes, Silas, you're doing a solo show, or are we thinking like, yeah, let's put on a black and a half evening of solo shows.
That could be, yeah. And
in which case, do you know how long you want your show to be? I will start marinating on this idea.
As long as the story takes. I can't write something to go, I'm going to write a 20-minute piece. I got to see what my story is and send it flesh.
That's fine. I just didn't know if there was like something you were aiming for.
No, you just came up with this.
I know. Isn't it great?
I don't have the details. I don't even know where I am. We started this. We you talked don't even about.
Know where you are.
We just talked about. I don't know as much. I don't know a lot of things. That's how this started. So I cannot know how long I'm going to write in the future.
There's a lot of things not to know. It's just. The older we get, the more we realize there's things we don't know.
The more things change. The more they change.
Quarters.
Black and a half.
Ladies and gentlemen, you are listening to the longest running comedy podcast in Seattle, probably. Yes, this is Black and a Half, hosted by Silas Lindenstein and Samantha Rund.
Black and a Half.